Welcome to episode 12 of the Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. In this episode, we discuss accessible tables on websites, their use cases, and why semantic HTML is, to this day, an essential skill for most developers. For show notes and a full transcript, go to accessibilitycraft.com/012. And now, on to the show.
Hi, it's Amber, and I'm here today with Steve.
Hello, everybody.
And Chris.
Hey there, I'm here.
All right, so we are going to have a fun time talking about tables.
Yeah.
But I think we need to have a beverage before we start talking about tables. So Chris, do you want to introduce our drink today?
Yeah, we're going to need a drink to talk about tables. So we've got the Live brand, L-I-V-E, sparkling probiotic kombucha cola flavor today. So this is apparently, according to the manufacturer, lower sugar than your run-of-the-mill kombucha. And it is cold brewed for a smoother, less harsh taste. And based on the label here, it looks like we're going to be enjoying some classic cola flavor combinations, including cinnamon and nutmeg, and hopefully some of that kind of sour kombucha-ness in the background there. Mm.
And I saw reviews on the website where people were saying that they used this to kick their soda habit. And I know both of you are Coke drinkers.
Hey,
so
now.
When I saw this in the grocery store, I was like, hey, maybe we should try this. I want to know. Yeah. Would you stop drinking Coke and drink this instead?
Well, how much caffeine is in it?
Oh, wait, that's a good point. Does it have caffeine at all, actually?
I don't think it does. Nope. It might. I don't know. No, I'm not seeing it.
Would it have to say caffeine on the label? If it's caffeinated, it would have to say. Oh, so does that mean, no, it will never replace Coke?
That's a hard no from me.
You know, we talk bad about Coke here, but you know, Coke's responsible for pushing a lot of these projects past completion. All the caffeine.
That's what you drink late at night?
Early in the morning, late at night, whatever it takes, right?
All day long.
Right.
All right, so shall we open our bottle?
Yeah, let's crack these open. I'm genuinely curious about this one because any like non-soda that tries to mimic a soda, I'm just automatically curious at how close it's going to get.
Oh, it has a little message inside the metal lid that says "Life's better with booch," which I guess is short for kombucha.
Oh no!
My cap says "Drink your booch by the batch," is what mine says. That's fun.
And mine says "Self-care is in your hands, literally."
Oh, Okay, so I'm gonna take a sip of this first, but I actually have a conversation point about that whole self-care and the probiotic thing, but I want to taste it first.
Yeah.
Or smell it.
It smells okay.
Does it smell
like it has like a cinnamon. It has a cinnamon smell. I'm getting a lot of cinnamon on the nose.
Yeah, it shows cinnamon on the front, you know, picture. Here we go.
Is cola have cinnamon normally? Like, that's a normal cola flavor?
Yeah, cinnamon is normal. I think that's one of the key flavorings in Coca-Cola. Not that anyone actually knows the Coca-Cola formula, right? But I feel like when I drink Coke, I taste cinnamon on it.
It kind of tastes to me like what I think a Coke tastes like. I don't drink Coke.
Yeah. As someone who partakes fairly often, to me it tastes like Coke that you left in ice a little too long, and the ice has diluted it a bit.
Yeah, for somebody with Diet Coke running through their veins, it's not bad. I mean, it's not, right? Like, it kind of tastes like cola.
It's kind of close.
It's kind of close. It's not carbonated, right? So you're missing that.
I mean, there's there's carbonation. It's just not pop level carbonation.
Yeah, it's not in your face. It's like very little, though.
You don't think it's you don't get the carbonation? I do.
But I don't know. Steve's was also shipped to him. Like, I get weird looks at the FedEx store, let me tell you. Like, really weird looks when I'm two-day shipping a single bottle of kombucha to Ohio.
Yeah. the FedEx lady has stopped asking for my ID. So.
Uh-oh. Well, it's not alcoholic, so you didn't have to give her an ID.
Right, right.
But oh, man, when we have our next beverage, I am going to have a really great story about trying to get it from an Uber driver.
Oh. Oh man. Yeah, so I want to pull us back to the kombucha just for another minute or two, but as I'm tasting this, the thing that I observe, and I don't know, you know, Steve, I don't know if you drink a lot of kombucha. I know Amber, you drink a lot of it. The thing that I notice about this is, and maybe it's the cold brewing they do. Like, this to me has a lot less of a typical kombucha character. Like, it's way less sour than I would have expected it to be. Because kombuchas to me are typically a little bit sour.
Well, I wondered about that because I do. I love kombucha. I drink lots of kombucha, but I always drink like fruit flavored or like a ginger is probably the closest to a root kind of kombucha. But I'm typically choosing like a fruity kombucha. So this is different. And I'm wondering if that sour comes from fermented fruit. And because this doesn't have, you know, like berries or something in it, maybe that's why it's not.
Yeah,
it's more on the tea side probably for the kombucha base.
The few kombuchas that I've tasted were pretty sour. I mean, like I did not enjoy them, but this is
I think this tastes kind of legitimately like a pop.
Yeah
No, it's pretty close,
like a flat like a flat pop.
Wait. How about, so it's not quite Coke. What about, is it like RC Cola?
I don't know.
Or Pepsi?
I mean, it's sweeter than, like, you know, I drink Diet Coke, right? So, like, it's sweeter than Diet Coke.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, Diet Coke is pretty, like, dry, you know?
I gotta say, I'm pretty impressed, like, the way that they've combined, because I'm reading the ingredients, right? So it's got tea, I would guess, like, some kind of maybe orange pekoe or black tea, and they've gotten that combined with cinnamon and nutmeg and some other things, and they've actually managed to kind of replicate cola.
Yeah.
It's kind of impressive, to be honest. This is one I normally am not one that comes back to kombucha ever. This is one I might actually legitimately pick up again. The other brand that I was going to mention, and I see it a lot down here in Texas, but it's called, I think it's called Olipop, Olipop, but it's a probiotic soda, that comes in a can. And I don't think it's kombucha specifically, but it's like a probiotic blend with juices and it's lightly carbonated, and their stuff is exceptionally good. It's also sweeter than this. But that might be one we do for one of our non-alcoholic options one of these weeks, up this one.
I want to talk about the probiotic thing for a minute here, because it says sparkling probiotic. However, what flagged for me is normally when you get probiotic beverages or like probiotic yogurt or whatever on the bottle, it will say what strains are included, like lactobacillus or whatever, and like how many parts. This does not. And then I went and I looked on their website, on their product page, and it also does not. So I either think they're lying or they're bad at labeling. But I don't know if you're required. I didn't Google this because I didn't actually care that much. But I don't know if they're required to label if it actually contains things like that, like lactobacillus and extra stuff that they've added under like supplement laws. So I'm wondering if that means it doesn't actually have it. And so I'm a little bit like, is it really probiotic? Does it really help your gut? Or are they just using that word without actually adding the stuff that they would need to add to legitimately make it do that?
Right. There's only one way of finding out. Tune into the next episode for the digestive benefits of live probiotic kombucha.
But it is kind of a tasty beverage, and I'm not a big Coke fan, but I like this. I agree. I think this would be something I would get again. And it's, you know, I know you guys like the caffeine, but if you're thinking like your kids want to have soda and it's, you know, 7 o'clock at night with a movie, maybe this would be a better option, right? Without the caffeine.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want to talk about tables, and we probably were going to talk about something different, but I was auditing a website's accessibility, and I got so triggered over the weekend. And so I was like, we're going to talk about tables. I also went and wrote a post for my Accessibility Weekly series at the admin bar about tables, even though I was going to write about something else because I was so triggered. And it was because the pricing table on this website was built completely in divs.
Hmm. And why is that bad?
Why is that bad, says the developer? So tables actually have some really important interactions for screen reader users, assuming they are made correctly. The key differences are twofold. One is that when you're in a table with the screen reader, you can use your arrow keys and your screen reader modifier to navigate up and down and left to right. You can only step through divs left to right. You can't go up and down. So on a pricing table, what being able to go up and down means is you could just choose like a pricing plan and you could go down and hear everything in that pricing plan. But if it's in divs and you can't do that, you have to go left to right. The other big thing that happens in tables, if they're done properly, is that when you're in a cell, it will not just read out the contents of the cell, but it will read out the heading that is associated with that cell, which is typically always a header at the top of the table, but also frequently in pricing tables, there's also a row header as well that's like on the left as you go across. So you can be in any cell and you would hear the coordinates of where you are. So you're in, you know, column 3, row 5, and this is the pricing plan name, and this is the row, the feature name, and this is whether or not it's included, as opposed to just hearing included, 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 included. Or if they got really bad and they forgot to actually have screen reader text, you just hear image, 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 image for all those little check marks. So those are like key things why using a table is good for data. Being able to move around it and being able to get more context on each individual cell.
So as you were looking through this, did specific tables come to mind, Amber, that you think are really good examples?
Yeah, so I actually spent some time because I wanted to give good feedback, and sometimes giving good feedback, it's helpful to find good examples. So I looked around and I was super impressed with HubSpot's pricing tables. So if you go on the HubSpot pricing page, which we'll link in the show notes, they have really great tables that have all the appropriate table HTML, and they also have good screen reader text if something is included or not included and all that. So shout out and kudos to HubSpot on that front. And if you're looking for an example, that would be a good one to go look at. I kind of got curious then because I went down this rabbit hole and I was wondering about WordPress plugins. So I went over and I checked TablePress's demo on their main website. And now this is an interesting thing, and I'm curious, Steve, what you think about this. And I don't even know if you've pulled it open, so I might be throwing you a curveball here. But they have search, and they have filtering on like their table column headers. You can filter.
Mm-hmm.
It mostly works for a keyboard-only user, but it's missing like the announcements and that sort of stuff that a screen reader would use. I did some screen reader testing on it.
For the header filters, right?
Mm-hmm. It doesn't tell you when they've filtered. So I'm sort of curious, you know, how you think about if someone's a non-developer and they're trying to use, like, this is one of the most commonly used WordPress plugins, you know, should they use this? Should they just not use the filtering? Sorry, it's not filtering. I guess it's ordering, isn't
the
it?
The order, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a way to turn it off? That's the question, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't try installing it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not. If you're going for, you know, a fully accessible table, you know, if that ordering is reordered. I mean, how disjointing is that for the screen reader if they have no context to how it's been reordered?
Yeah, so that's one thing. I don't think it's said. So it did it right in that it's user triggered only, like it doesn't randomly reorder, right?
Yeah.
So it requires input from the user to cause that. But I'm not sure if it actually was clear that it's like alphabetical when you hit it, you know, that it would say like sorted, you know, alphabetically A to Z. Mm-hmm. And then you do it again and it should probably say sorted alphabetically Z to A. Or something like that, I guess, would be what the announcement would have to be.
Yeah, I see.
It's also, do you think that could be considered a toggle button? You know how there's ARIA for toggle?
Yeah, like if it's been toggled or not. I mean, there probably should be some context on to whether, like, which way it's ordered, which way it's currently ordered, right? Without them having...
Oh, like when the page first loads. What's the default?
Well, like if I go to first name, right? If I go to the table header and I hit first name... I have no context on if it is alphabetical currently without going through each one. Okay, and figuring out it's alphabetical, then going back up and then reordering it to be, you know, ascending or descending, right? Like, I think it would be wise to have that, you know, first name ascending alphabetical, you know, some screen reader text put on there. And then
so if there was a toggle on that, you could indicate that by having whichever one is currently being used to control the sort order be the one that's toggled on.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you choose a different one, the ARIA, like, toggle gets reset, right, on the one that was previously.
Yeah, if you go to, like, the last name, is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you would do a sort like that, the resorting doesn't take into account. It's not like an or, right? It's just this table heading now controls the ordering, right? So it's mm-hmm. the current one you're on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so it's like, it's a series of toggles where only one is allowed to be active.
Right. Now, I mean, I think in an advanced use case, there could be a case where you could build something where it's more of a faceted kind of search. But I think we're talking about a different thing at that point, right? Where it might not be acceptable for it to be a table. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah. Like if you're saying order, like in Excel, where you can say order by this and then order by that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, or I mean, it might be a table, but probably you wouldn't have filters on your column. Or, sorry, I keep calling them filters when I think they're actually sort buttons.
Yeah, order by, yeah.
But you'd probably have like a form or something above where you'd have to set choose all your options and hit submit, which is, I think, how it works on Excel too, right? Or Google Sheets.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that's like an advanced use case, right? So it might be wise for us to jump back a step and ask ourselves, why are developers not coding tables semantically? There was a time before CSS, and I think I've mentioned this before, yes, I'm older than CSS, where you had no choice but to make a table semantic, right? You had no choice but to do it right, or it wouldn't even look right on the page.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. A WordPress native tool, Accessibility Checker provides reports directly on the post edit screen. Reports are comprehensive enough for an accessibility professional or developer, but easy enough for a content creator to understand. Accessibility Checker is an ideal tool to audit existing WordPress websites, find accessibility problems during new builds, or monitor accessibility and remind content creators of accessibility best practices on an ongoing basis.
Scans run on your server, so there are no per-page fees or external API connections. GDPR and privacy compliant. Real-time accessibility scanning. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to a paid version of Accessibility Checker to scan custom post types and password-protected sites. View site-wide open issue reports and more. Download Accessibility Checker free today at equalizedigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code accessibilitycraft to save 10% on any paid plan.
Well, I mean, that's how you make columns on pages, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you would make sidebars like for websites in a table. Like the whole website container was a cell.
I literally remember doing that in high school on like a personal website, like, and being really proud of myself writing an HTML table and having the links properly displayed on the left and the thing on the right.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we're at a place now with development where it's like, we have to train developers to kind of go back to basics, right? We've had all these years of CSS being able to modify things and JavaScript being able to modify things to where accessibility is rightly so becoming very front of mind to a lot of people. And I think for a lot of developers, they'd be well suited to take a step back and just go through the basic HTML semantic documentation and ensure that they're making semantic markup.
So I'm curious, as a non-developer, like, who I understand basic HTML, right? And I know that's a fairly straightforward language. And I'm wondering, like, why skip over all of that to something that I perceive to be more complex, right? Like a CSS or JavaScript or any of the others, right? Like, why is everything in a div now? Like, I don't quite get it.
Yeah. It's a simple answer. It's responsive.
Because you can do things like grid and stuff on it?
Yeah, you can do grid. I mean, it's difficult to make a table responsive, like to make it look good, responsive. And sometimes you're presented with with designs that have the headers shifted differently than they are on desktop. So that's why you see, like, I can't name it off the top of my head, but I know there's like a JavaScript library that will handle some of that for you, that will like move things on mobile. So like your head, it'll show like, say, the row one heading, and then it'll show all the cells below it. Then it'll show the next heading, all the cells below it, you know, on mobile, which is a nice way to view it. Whereas without that, all your headings are still at the top. And I've seen like horizontal overflow, like you scroll horizontal to see the whole table on mobile. Now, I'm not saying that JavaScript library should be used, because I have not tested it or whatever, you know, if I could even think of the name of it. But I don't know that that's wise for a screen reader, right? It might be moving things programmatically that the screen reader is not picking up. So, I mean, that's why I would see a table not done as a table done. And plus, tables out of the box come with a little bit of like CSS bloat. Like if you don't have a good like CSS reset in your CSS file, like when you put a table in, a lot of times it comes with like some padding that you're not expecting. And, you know, you've got your table border, which acts a little different than like a regular border does. So just based on the design, things can get kind of weird. Like if you're trying to put like a border right or a border left, like you get to the end of the row and like the there's not a border. So then you got to put a border on the table body to kind of make it look like that border belongs to the cell, you know? You know, that way you don't end up with like two borders, like mashed right against each other, where you're trying to do like a one pixel border and you end up with two pixels. So I mean, I think for design and responsive is the main reason why people do that.
Yeah, choose divs.
Yeah.
Because it's
yeah.
easier. But sometimes so, easy how isn't much, always the best solution.
Yes. Yeah. That's frequently the case. How much easier is it, just out of curiosity? Like building something like a pricing table with just dibs versus doing it what we would consider the right way with a table that a real table that's responsive.
I don't know. I sort of have to push back a little bit on that. Like, I get that there's weirdness with CSS, especially if you're using like a theme out of the box or like a starter theme where you've built in some basics, right? Like mm-hmm. there's stuff that might apply to other random data tables that you don't want in the design of your pricing table. But at the same time, like, you still have to do some work to get your divs to all line up. Like yeah. this particular table that I saw had class, well, it had a parent div that had a class of table. That's why I laughed so hard. And then it had like within that there were parent divs that had a class of row, and then inside them, like they had all the classes in order to faux, I think, like table rows and table cells right. and all of that kind of stuff. So I feel like you still have to do work to make divs look like a table.
Yeah, I think so too. And so a question would be like, if dibs were used, right, what if they took the next step? What if they added the correct rules to it? Is that acceptable? Like roll table? Roll.
Is there, I don't actually even know. Is there ARIA for?
Yeah, I believe there's ARIA spec.
You can use the roll equals and add all of the table. I'm Googling it right now, and yeah, Chris gets mad when I search because we get keyboard sounds in our recording.
That's all right. We're doing it live, people.
Yes.
Roll. Yeah, there's row table. There's row. Roll. Sorry, let me pronunciate this. Roll table. And then there's roll row group. And then there's roll row. There's row column header.
Well, a column header wouldn't apply to tables, though, right? Or would it? Is that how you would make like a column scoped
yep.
TH?
Yep. Oh. Yep.
So, I mean, technically, I guess if you can.
I mean, it's a lot more work, I think, but like, because you might even have to add, like, it looks like. You know, I pulled up an example here. It looks like they're even defining row indexes as well.
Interesting. So if all of these roles are assigned, would a user be able to move through with their arrow keys as you would expect, just like they would with an HTML table?
Well, the thing that gets hard about some of that ARIA stuff is that it's not adding ARIA isn't enough. You also typically have to have JavaScript to add some of the keyboard interactions.
Yeah.
So like if you add roll equals button on something, it won't make it focusable.
Yeah.
And it also mm-hmm. won't say that you can hit your spacebar to trigger it. You gotta have other things happened as well. Actually, we'll have to link this in the show notes over on the Mozilla developer docs, because there is stuff here and examples with the HTML and the like JavaScript and stuff.
Yeah, I think with the area label that you're sacrificing some of the built-in work that the browser does for you when it comes to a table. And like Amber said, you would have to make up for some of those shortcomings with JavaScript. I once heard at some conference, I'm not sure which one it was, AxeCon or something like that, that the best ARIA to use is no ARIA, right? And now we use it when we need to, you know, hide elements. And I mean, it's utilized where necessary, right? But in this case, I think this is kind of the extreme. It's like, why go through all this effort to duplicate something that is easily done with just straight semantic HTML.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think if you really had some, so the website I was auditing hasn't been launched yet, so it's like it should just be fixed and rebuilt with the table right. tags. But you know, maybe there is an argument if you have a data table built with divs that is public and there's some other things like a bunch of styles or other things that are already applied to it. Maybe that would be a case where you would come and add all the roles. I haven't tested this, so I have no idea. I mean, I tend to trust the Mozilla developer docs, so maybe it is possible, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go that route if you didn't have to, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the other thing that's worth talking about with tables is tables that have a lot of headers that are like spanning rows or columns, merging cells, things like that are really complex. I put in our, when I wrote the documentation for accessibility checker on empty or missing table heading, I have a thing down at the bottom and it has a table that is accessible that has merged headings on it. But I literally was like, if this does work and you can do it, but really you probably shouldn't. Right. That was my opinion, but I'm curious what you guys think about providing like tables with headings that span and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, so doing like, you know, merging cells and spanning cells, I think, I mean, I would, if you have to do it, I would definitely do some thorough screen reader testing on it. I don't know that I recall a time where I've, you know, had to like do a lot of testing on that. So I'm not 100% sure how the screen reader reads that out, right? Like if you have, say you have four rows, right? And your second row spans two. So I'd have to do some testing myself on that just to see how that reads out. And if it's confusing to me, it's going to be probably confusing to anybody.
Yeah, the W3C has tutorials on like building tables, and there's one for tables with the regular headers. I guess my thought on it, so they have an example on this, and it's, what is it? I don't totally quite get this. There's planets, Mars and Venus, as the top, it span, but that header spans two columns, and then under it, they have a produced and sold for each one of those. And then on the left, they have teddy bears and board games. So I don't know, people on Mars who created and sold. Or those are companies. I don't know. I thought Mars made candy. But but anyway, like I guess the alternative to this, which would probably be easier for people to understand, is not trying to make them one table. So you'd have a heading for Mars, and then you have this produced and sold column table. And then you'd have a heading for Venus, and you'd have a separate produced and sold column. But the downside of that is maybe it's harder to compare the data quickly because you have to scroll up and down.
Yeah, I mean these rows have like so for everybody listening, there's two rows in this table, and the row starts with what looks like a table heading, right? Visually, one says teddy bears and the other is board games, but it's scoped as a row. So I'm talking about the first column of a row looks like it has another heading, and here I'll back up a little bit too, and this is another point we wanted to hit on, was so at the very top there's some empty cells, right? So you've got headings running horizontally and vertically, and then there's like the top left corner square is in this case it's two rows, has nothing in it. So you would want to do like an aria hidden on those, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you don't want to confuse.
Yeah, that actually came up in a WordPress accessibility meetup this week when Alex and I, we once a quarter, we do free plugin audits for plugin developers in WordPress. And he was looking at a table and it just was saying to him blank. And he's like, I don't need to hear about the cell.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you put aria hidden, it wouldn't even be focusable. Yeah. Yeah.
So one thing that, you know, I found kind of interesting is that, and admittedly, I haven't always done was the scoping attribute, the scope attribute.
Yeah, I mean, that's really important. If you have headers on the top and on the left, you can't just put TH tags on them because it won't really know how to apply the TH tags. Like, I don't think it's smart enough to know, well, this is the first one in the row. So that's how it knows this is a heading for this row and this is a heading for this column.
Yeah. Okay. And that scoping can be done, I think, in another fashion using IDs and headers. So you and I think this is even more might be even more advanced scoping, but it requires more markup. Like, so where you could put in your table header, you can add like. So let's walk through it. So you got like table head, then you got a TR tag, then you got a TH tag, right? So on that first TH tag, you have an ID equals, in this case, let's say purchase. Okay, and then the rest of the headers have an ID attribute on them. So if you jump down to the body tag, you go T body and the TR tag, then to your TH tag, and you can have an ID of on that one as well. But when you get to the TD tag, you now use the header attribute. And in that header attribute, you define that ID tag that you used on the TH. So like in this case, it'd be like purchase, right? And then you give it a unique identifier as well. So it scopes in even further. Like it's, so the header says, So let me back up a little bit. I know this might be confusing, but to listen to audible coding. That's what we should call this episode.
By the way, just for our audience, all of the things we're referring to, like the Mozilla docs and what we're talking about right now on W3, this is all going to be linked in the show notes so you can try to follow along.
Yeah, exactly. So I have a TH tag with an ID of haircut. I have a TD tag inside of that or next to that with a header equals location haircut. So it's like it's scoped in even further than I think even a role element would do. Now, admittedly, I haven't done this. I haven't tested it, but I'm reading about it and it seems interesting.
I don't know. So this takes me to the tweet that you found, Chris. Which maybe you can talk about it a little bit because I'm listening to this HTML and it's interesting, right? And like there's a whole bunch of attributes and things like that. I wasn't aware that you could do table headers in that way. So I'm thinking this is complex. It's not basic or like it's not like any 10-year-old knows how to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is credit where it's due. This is Brent Morton. On Twitter, his user tag is B1, like the number one, mind. And he posted this tweet, and I'm just going to read it. It says, keep hearing people in resume and portfolio reviews saying to not list HTML and CSS as tech skills. Accessible and semantic HTML/CSS are skills. We have a big issue in our industry with people ignoring two fundamental building blocks of the web. I retweeted this and it was just timely. Like I saw this right after we had kind of a quick internal powwow about Ember encountering this table and her testing that was built entirely out of divs. And it struck me. I was like, huh, this is interesting. And so I'm curious to know, and maybe our audience can even comment or weigh in once this episode drops, but why would someone be embarrassed to list HTML as a skill?
Right, because it's not React.
Do the boot camps even teach HTML?
Well, I mean, you want
beyond basics?
Do you want a snide response to that, or an
give the Steve response? Whatever you want to say.
From what I've seen, they're not teaching much of anything, but.
Mm.
Ooh. mic drop. But I mean, there's definitely a deficiency for knowing basic semantic HTML. And you're right, Amber. Like, you know, we may have started with, this is easy, just do it, right? It's easy. But even ourselves, you know, who, you know, we spend all day thinking about accessibility. We're like, oh, well, we haven't done it that way. And that's interesting that there's even another way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I think so. I know, you know, we've posted a couple job listings lately, and we've put that on there, and we've defined it as, you know, accessible semantic HTML.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's, I wonder if there's just this assumption that HTML is basic. So if I write that I know React or Vue or Ember or whatever, then people will just assume that I also am good at HTML. So I don't need to list that. Maybe I'm trying right. to keep my skills section so my resume can fit in a single page. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know. Those silly things. Like, I remember in high school when they were teaching us to write resumes, they were like, it should be one page.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that I've written a resume for a really long time, but at this point I'm like, no. Having hired people, I would rather have a more thorough overview of what they've done than a one-pager.
Right.
So maybe that's the assumption?
Yeah, I mean, the assumption would be that you know, and maybe even React and, you know, all those frameworks that we talk about. I mean, at the core of it, we're talking about JSX, right? Like, where you're writing HTML inside of JavaScript. Right. Mm-hmm. Maybe JSX, since it's more structured in how the HTML is formatted, maybe it does some of this semantic work for the developer. Right. Since you're just defining the tag and maybe the attribute, you're not necessarily writing it all out. It's being, you know, it's being compiled and the compiler is kind of interpreting that, you know, maybe to some degree they don't see the need to actually just start with straight HTML. Like, I think, you know, seasoned guys like me have a little bit of an advantage, because when I started coding websites, there was no CSS, right? Like, you know, I remember when CSS Garden came up. If anybody remembers CSS Garden, it was just a whole new paradigm in thinking, right? Like, you can apply a style sheet and then apply a different one, and the website looks totally different, right? And that's kind of where the mess started, right? And then you add in JavaScript, and it just takes it even further. But I think knowing HTML thoroughly is super important. And to be 100% honest with the audience, I've even gone through somewhat of a re-education of semantic HTML as well, you know, so that I can ensure that I'm making accessible websites and applications and whatnot.
Yeah.
So I'm going to come out of left field with because I'm good at naive questions. I'm completely naive question, and I'm wondering, as we see all of this evolve, like as we see the web evolve, as we see computer technology evolve, are we kind of at the spinoff point where either we all need to go back to basics and make sure we're observing these fundamental baseline languages like HTML and CSS? Or is it more of a situation where as we get into more advanced web applications, like do the screen readers themselves need to evolve to better interpret what's out there? Like, and I wonder if that's even possible or even answerable here. Like, is it that the screen readers haven't caught up, or is it that we need to go back to basics? Just quick opinion.
Oh, okay. On the pricing table example, I don't know how a screen reader would, I don't, maybe with AI, it could like, what we're talking about is it would have to assemble the page, interpret how the divs are laid out from the assembled page. So like what in a virtual yeah. browser, and then go, oh, this is supposed to be a table.
Yeah.
Based on the CSS. Like, I don't know how we could possibly expect a screen reader to do that.
Yeah. I mean, there might be a case for that. And Chris, to your question, it's probably both, right? You know, there's, Obviously, there's a lot that us developers can do to ensure that the screen reader works, right? And this semantic HTML has been around for, you know, 30, 40 years now, right? Like, the screen reader, you know, shouldn't have to go backwards for us doing things wrong, right? And to some degree, the screen reader actually does kind of interpret things that aren't necessarily semantic HTML, you know, just as we talked about earlier through the ARIA spec, right? We can go through and we can mimic a semantic HTML table with the ARIA spec. So the screen reader is kind of that giving us an avenue to be able to read that out as if it's a table and still allowing us to not make it an actual table.
Interesting. Yeah. So I can't believe it, but we've almost talked about tables for 45 minutes. I didn't going into this episode, I didn't think, I was like, it's not possible.
Yeah.
It's
I
not
told possible. You. I told you we'd be able to.
But I want to finish us with a question, which is, when shouldn't you use a table? Because I don't think we really addressed that.
Yeah, so actually at Accessibility Checker office hours today, like someone asked me the difference between pricing tables that are literal tables, and then sometimes you'll see, and actually we do this on our website as well, pricing laid out in columns with headers, and then the features are in bulleted lists below. Also on the WordPress Accessibility Day website, we did that for our sponsorship tiers. And I think that hearing that content in under headers and in lists is what screen reader users would prefer. But the big difference there is that there's no left side column providing extra information about what is under the tiers. All of the text for the tier is included in the column in the bulleted list. So like that's sort of a decision point, which is, do you need those row headers or not?
Right. Does your data need an X and a Y to be interpretable?
And if it doesn't, then it probably is actually better to do it in divs that you make columns, but you need to make sure you have, you know, headers that make sense and provide context and all that.
Yep. What about navigation?
Yeah, navigation should not be in a table. Only data should be in a table.
Yeah, nope.
Don't use tables for layout, folks.
And navigation should be a list, right?
Mm-hmm. Navigation should be a list.
Okay. Cool.
There's a lot of things that should probably be lists instead of tables, like grids of posts.
Yeah.
Or like membership directories. I've seen sometimes where they put those in tables, but really it should just be a list.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you bring that up, and maybe this is a good topic for another episode, but I did see that you know, on a current project we're working on that you mentioned, like related posts being displayed as a list, and I found that kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we could have a whole conversation about lists, but the short answer on lists, and I'm actually flagging this on a whole different website that we're auditing right now, is that the helpful thing on lists is that users of screen readers will get the number of items that are included. And this is why in WordPress, if you look at the core posts block, it outputs in a list. Because then when they hit the first one, they hear one of three or one of nine. And they know what to expect, what's coming back. Because if you just put things like that in divs, then they don't know, well, what if I don't care about related posts and I want to move beyond this? I could quickly jump to you can also skip to the bot, like in a table, you can skip past the table. In a list, you could skip past the list. But if you just have things in divs, they are forced to go through all nine of your related posts before they can get to the content below the related posts.
So it's okay, like inside of an LI item, to just put the article tag?
Yeah, it should be an unordered list, not an ordered list.
But I mean, it's okay to nest the article tag right inside of there?
Yeah, I am 99% certain that you're allowed to have an article tag inside an LI element.
Mm, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And I think at this point we have stopped talking about tables, which just maybe means it's time for us to sign off, and we can come back in future time and talk about making good post blocks. That might be a good topic for us to discuss. Yeah. So, all right.
Well, it was a shockingly good conversation for something as seemingly mundane as tables. So thank you both. And thank you for answering my somewhat naive questions.
Yeah, and I think we all left with, we would recommend people give live sparkling probiotic kombucha cola flavored a try.
Yep.
They have a root beer flavor, which I tried, and it tasted legitimately like root beer to me. So, yeah.
Maybe a future episode drink.
Yeah.
Maybe.
All
right. Well, thanks, everybody.
All right. Take care.
See you later.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.